welcome to all of you all. I'm so excited that you're with me or with us, because we have a special guest that is amazing person, a friend of mine I've known for years, and I'm looking forward to this conversation. Those of you who this is your first time joining us on Purpose Conversation is what this is called, and it's really about having conversation with influential and intentional people whose stories inform us, encourage us, as well as inspire us to live authentic lives and intentional lives through our purposes and our passion. And I am so excited about this conversation. I believe in a principle called educare. It's actually a word. It's a Latin word that means to bring out. It's what my coaching leaders image is about. It's about bringing out of people what's innately within them, helping them see the best in them. And so this conversation, I really believe, is going to be that conversation. I also know that her story, her life, and those that she's influenced would help you to get where you're going. Sometimes hearing people tell their story and talk about their journey helps us understand and kind of lock in for where we should be going, where we are, and what I like to say, from where we are to where God wants us to be. And so, again, welcome to On Purpose Conversation. I'm going to bring my friend to the forefront. She is, I'll let her introduce herself, but she is an amazing person. She has a nickname, and we'll get to that when she comes in. But in the meantime, I'm going to bring my friend Sheree Lee to the stage. Welcome, Sheree.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
yes, that nickname. So when I met Sheree, I heard about that name. So to give a little history and reason why this conversation is really important to me, scripture talks about this. There's a scripture that talks about their how friends are a friend loveth at all time, and a brother is there for adversity. But there's a scripture that says, and I'm in the New Revised Standard Version. This is the one I like. It says, some friends play at friendship, but a true friend sticks closer than one's nearest kin. And I could say that about you. You are a true friend. We don't talk every day. We haven't talked in a while. We talk over web and all of that. But one of the things I can say about you is you're impactful and influencing lots of people and have done it for years. And I'm so glad for you to be on this conversation. The other thing is, and I was getting to that point to say, when I found out who you were, I came over to the church, to Valley, when you were on staff there, and I was just a musician with Reverend Jordan, and I was watching you run around and just kind of be in charge. And then I heard somebody called you Sarge. And I was like, oh, well, maybe she's in the military. Maybe that's why she's so like organized and all of that. How did that nickname come to be?
It's so crazy. So my first year being a children's pastor at the Valley, they didn't give us curriculum. I had to write my own curriculum.
Really?
And so I had to write my own curriculum. And so the first curriculum that I wrote was Building Small Soldiers. And so I had all of the staff, instead of calling them sister this and brother that, we called everybody Sarge. Even me, mine just stuck. Like,
I love it.
And so I've been Sarge for 20 something years, and everybody thinks like you, you know, she must have been in the military. No, it came from church. And today, all the kids that came up under me still call me Sergeant Lee. My pastor, my apostle, he still today calls me Sarge.
So that was when I heard him say that, I was like, oh, this is serious. Like, She for real. She for real is in control. And the one of the things that I told you before we came on is my wife, when she saw you, she immediately thought, she is somebody that she looks very nice and looks like she is very great with people, but she also looks like, don't play with me. Don't play with me. And when I heard Apostle say that, I was like, oh, okay, that's a for real thing. But one of the things, where did that confidence and where did all that come from? Like the creativity. Well, we'll get into creativity and all that, but where did that confidence come from and that kind of go get it attitude come from?
You know, I don't know. It's always been me. I've always been, you know, a lot. You know, I've always been the do too much, just from a little girl. Like it's just always been there. And then my parents didn't stifle it. You know, they told me I could be, do anything. I believed them.
You grew up in the D, right?
I did. Detroit. Lions, come on. Lions.
Well, look, for real, I was the other day in front of the TV like, yes, yeah. And I'm like, whoa.
30 years, y'all.
What was it, 1960 something?
No, actually 1992, I believe it.
Oh,
was.
Okay, my fault.
93.
You said 30 years, and I just in my mind dated okay. Way back. Okay.
Yeah,
1993. Wow. But growing up in Detroit, was it like, what was that like? Is that, did you have to, as you said, you were, you know, a lot or a bit or much, and your mother didn't like stifle it or whatever. Was it also the environment that you grew up? Was that a part of it?
Not at all. Okay. First of all, I was an Army brat. I really was an Army brat. So I started school in Hawaii. My dad was stationed in Oahu. We were there for 3.5 years, and then we moved to Kansas. And so we were there for a number of years, and then finally came back to Detroit. So I was in early elementary.
Okay.
And we came back to Detroit. But, you know, Detroit is exactly like Chicago to me.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Everybody's like, oh, it's so bad. I don't know that Detroit, because it was just home to me.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, I even though, you know, the drug culture did hit my family, my dad was a user for years, you know, which probably, you know, could be why I'm so resilient.
You got know. A little extra, huh?
Yeah. But as a rule, you know, I was just a regular kid, just, you know, growing up.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. Now, that's a little something I did not know, that, you know, you were Army brat, and that was a part of your story. And I think another thing that, so when I first met you years ago, like, can I say this to you, that you were, and we'll talk about it, but you know that you were a breath of fresh air when it came to ministry, because I was able to like come over to the church and be like, or just call and be like, Cherie, like.
And I definitely tell you, nothing churchy.
But what I loved and still love is you serve kind of like as a mentor to me, and you didn't know that, but I watched you and I watched your relevancy. I watched your culture, how you were really connected to culture and all of that. And then you were ultra creative. Tell me, where did the creativity come from?
Again, since I was a little girl, I've always been a creative. So when I was little, I used to write plays, give me a whole notebook and write out plays, write the lines. I would make tickets out that notebook paper, sell the tickets to my neighbors.
No.
Sell the tickets to my neighbors. I would have my great grandmother to make baked goods so that we could sell them at the shows. And I would make my brother and my two cousins and a couple of our friends in the neighborhood act in my plays, like from a young age. And so in Detroit, we had these, our porches were full porches. And staged to me. And so, yeah, it started there. And I would just write these plays and make everybody act in them, you know, have people buying tickets back then.
I did not know that. I told you my wife is looking forward to this conversation, and that's why, because she's the exact, I'll let her tell her story when y'all meet, because that is such a similar, I hear those stories all the time of being a kid. And you know what? It's usually the things that we do when we're younger, when we're really young, is often a peek into who we are and who God wants us to be and where we should be going in life. And I think sometimes we miss that. Miss it because we're influenced by so many things and so many other people. Who were your influences?
Definitely my mom. She was just my hero, you know. And Wonder Woman.
I remember
that. My mom and Wonder Woman, you know, and then even my mom and dad separated when I was young, but they were still married. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up going to live with my great grandmother and my grandparents. So we had a two flat that mm-hmm. was just used as one big house. And okay. So I had my great grandmother there, my grandmother, my grandfather, you know, and we didn't have a big family. That was it. Wow. Like my mother, one, you know, one sister, my dad was the only child. So we had a very small family, but we were a family family. So,
wow. Yeah. That's amazing. That's amazing. And do you still go up there?
Yeah. So my mom still lives in Michigan. Okay. Actually, I'm going to see her on February 17th. How about that?
That's an amazing day.
Yeah, I'm going to see her that day. So my mom and her sister are the only ones that are still living. My dad was actually killed. My brother was recently, a couple years ago, murdered. So, you know.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, my condolences. I didn't know that part. The culture, the creativity, that was one of the things that influenced me when I met you. So for those, I can just share this with those who are watching. So I was children's minister of music when we went over the valley. Reverend Jordan, who was my mentor for years, still is actually, he my wife and I, he was our counselor prior to us getting married. He's still my guy. Love that man. And he came over there to preach and do a service for you at the valley. And, you know, I walked in and I never knew. So again, I was used to pastors or youth pastors. So you had Reverend Carey, you had John Hanna, you had Craig Barnett, you had Patrick Winfield. These are people that I knew of, and they were all guys. And then children's pastor, Reverend Jordan. And then other side to it was everything else. Children's ministry was all white, and it was all women. When I got to the valley and then you walk out, and first of all, I thought you were one of the kids, as everybody always do. You were so like on it, just, and people were running back and forth. And I remember standing there thinking, she runs all this? And it's that tradition side of me growing up in a Baptist church, really a very conservative Baptist church. And so I saw this and I'm like, yo, you know, and I knew about the valley. I would come to visit the valley even, but to like I didn't know that was what was going on. And then you come out and just handle it. And then, as I said, look like a kid, very relevant, you know. And I think one of the things about Reverend Jordan is kids knew not to play with Reverend Jordan, but he was playful. But you still had that same anointing where kids didn't play with you, but you were very connected to them. I told my wife, you looked like when you were that leader that all the kids looked down at their shoes and be like, I like the shoes. Or they were, you were that. And that for me was like, wow, this is, she's different. And so then when I became children's pastor, I was like, man, I don't know who else Black to talk to. So let me just go ahead and call Sheree. And it was about it. What was important to me in this conversation is important to me. It's because of who you are and how you do things. And we've already talked about like your creativity. But when it came to the culture, you were so connected to like Black kids, like your community. You, man, I was going to say this until later. In fact, I didn't think I would bring it up. But I remember when, as I started doing a lot of stuff in a lot of white conferences and all of that, and I was like, y'all don't know Sheree? Like, she's doing it big. It's like, what y'all think about me? This is the one that helped me and all that. And, you know, that introduction happened and all that. And you didn't, I don't, you walked a little different amongst those people. Why was that? Why is the culture, why has the culture or Black culture and being who you are and the type of person you are been important for you? And why did you use that when you taught the kids and all of that? I know that's been a while, but still.
To be honest, being Black is, that's all I know. Again, mm-hmm. I grew up in Detroit. Mm-hmm. It was Black. I went to Kentucky State University.
Okay.
Was okay. Black. Yeah. You know, I got married, moved to Chicago. It's Black.
Black.
So, yeah. You know, yeah, yeah. I just always been connected to my culture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And then when it came to kids and knowing Christ, and again, I'm looking for curriculum, and it's like one kid on there that looks like us, and I'm just like, mm-hmm. and, you know, with all due respect, it was a little hokey for yeah. our community.
Absolutely.
And so it just, I'm like, this is not working. That's how I ended up writing my own curriculum.
Wow.
Because, you know, I'm like, look, these kids not gonna listen to me if I come with the songs, with the yeah. whole thing. It just, I'm like, look,
yeah.
this is not gonna work, you know. And even how I became the children's pastor.
That was a yep. There you go. I want to know that story.
Okay, so, in Detroit, I went to Perfecting Church under Marvin Winans.
Yes.
And so in Detroit, I was involved in the nursery ministry, and it was a well-oiled machine. They taught these babies Jesus, and that really impacted me. Mm. So when my husband drug me to Chicago, met in college, and you know, from Chicago, when he drug me to Chicago, and we found, you know, the Valley as a church home. The last ministry I had served in was the nursery. So I'm like, okay, mm-hmm. I'll come serve in the nursery. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was serving in the nursery. Next thing I know, I got a call asking me to be over the nursery.
Wow.
I was like, oh, okay, sure. So I came in and, you know, I'm very regimented and mm-hmm. I came in with policies and everything. They're like, it's the nursery. I'm like, and, you know, I'm like, we're not about to be babysitting in here. And so... Yeah. You know, I came up with full on stuff for the babies to learn Jesus, because I'm like, listen, and I'm a big researcher. Mm-hmm. And when I found out that people accept Christ, the biggest age group between 2 and 14, I was like, mm-hmm. oh, OK, gotta start. Like, we can't be playing over here with the babies. So
yeah.
I was doing the nursery. I was under Craig Barnett, who is a walking Bible.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Call him Solomon.
Yeah.
He was the youth pastor, but he did youth and children. But our children was so big that I started noticing, like, yo, y'all kind of youth heavy. You're not really paying attention to the kids. You know, it was like, no, you know, knock on Craig, but I'm like, look, you cannot do all of this. And so I started watching and researching, and I did a full on proposal to Apostle, telling him why we needed a children's pastor.
And that's Apostle Daniel H. Wilson.
Daniel Wilson, yeah. And I gave him a proposal about being a children's pastor. And he met with me. You know, I sent him this proposal, and it was, when I say it was comprehensive, it was so long. And I said how, you know, the areas that was needed and how I would do this. And, you know, I did not talk to Craig before I did it. I didn't. I was so out of order. I just sent it to Apostle, like, hey, this is what you need, because I worked at the church.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah. I had
a relationship with my pastor, you know, yeah. And I telling Craig, you know, you is missing something. Craig gonna listen to me. So I you know, gave Apostle this proposal. He called me into the meeting, and I remember him asking me, you know, what if you get tired of the kids? I said, and at the time, you know, I had children. And I said, I get tired of my own kids. I'm pretty sure I'm probably gonna get tired of these kids too. And he said it was that answer. He was like, it's such a real answer. And I'm like, yeah. But that don't mean I'm not called to minister to them.
Yeah. So
that's how I became a children's pastor. Because I was working at the church as the a ministry assistant. And then I had given him a proposal. Because I'm a fixer. And if I see that there is something missing that I can feel, I'll feel it. So I gave him a proposal to be the special events coordinator. I'm like, look, yo, y'all, the events are falling short because, you know, the right hand doesn't know what the left hand is doing. So I gave him a proposal. Yeah. Why we needed that. Became that. Then a year later, I gave him the proposal for the children's pastor. He like, you just got this other job. And I'm like, yeah, but forget that. And so I was the children's pastor there for 13 years.
Wow. That, you know, it's crazy. I'm thinking back and I'm listening to you. I'm thinking some of those habits, I remember conversations we would have. And I would go back and do some of that because that was what I appreciate and still appreciate is your ability to take an idea, bring it down and put it on paper. And that's one of the things I learned. I remember learning from you is if it can't be written, it can't be done. If you can't write it out, if you can't, when we did our Sidewalk Sunday School, you were the first person I called. Well, when they mentioned in 2007, we want to do something, we're going to do this big whatever. And they're like, well, EC, you got to come up with something with the kids. And I was like, I don't know what to do. And I don't remember how it came up, but I called you and was like, yo, I need this. And you were like, I got this. I'll send you over this and this. I'm like, yo, like she is. And but this is like years, even our relationship as in children's ministry had been going on. But you've always been that kind of like, it's got to be written. It's you got to proposals. You have to have it in a proposal. I remember those conversations. What is that just again? It is that. Well, I want to ask, is that something I've already asked that question? But what I was thinking is for you, is that a lost art for people?
You know what?
There's a reason why I'm asking it, but keep going.
You know what? I don't knock people that don't do it, but I just can't function any other way, you know? Mm-hmm. And when I don't have that structure, that organization, my whole little, you know, self-diagnosed ADHD, OCD goes crazy because, you know, I need it. I just got to be organized, you know.
In addition to that, I think you said something that really struck me with on meeting needs. There are a lot of people looking for purpose. There are a lot of people looking for, like, what am I supposed to be doing in life? And for me, just hearing that makes me think you met needs. Those proposals were connected. They weren't just like, hey, I have an idea out the sky that I just want to do something, but they were connected to something. They talk a little about that, if you don't mind.
Yeah, that so that for me, again, I'm a troubleshooter, I'm a fixer. And mm-hmm. so if I'm in a situation, whether it be at, you know, a job or whatever environment, I am looking to see how I can make a difference, you know, how I can make it better. You know, sometimes that's not always the best thing. Just innately what I do, you know, and especially if I'm in something that, you know, I know I'm committed to and I'm going to be in, I can't just see something and know that I can make a difference, you know. And then I always feel like this. I have a saying, I've been saying it for years. I'm already at no. If you tell me no, it's okay. I was already there. So my little feeling's not going to be hurt, you know, because you said no, I was already there. But you might say yes. So,
you know, I remember that. I remember there were plenty of conversations we would have and you would say that, but I didn't know that was like a thing for you. But you would, that was like a passing that always would come up. It was like, well, I'm already at no. So why don't we just do it? Or like, I thought all I could do is ask. That to me, Sheree, is all of who you are and who I've seen over the years. So working at the church, what was that like? In the church?
Okay. I enjoy working at the church because I have to give it up to Apostle. Mm-hmm. When I say he trusted me with so much, like all my ideas, all my crazy stuff that I wanted to do, he just went along with it. Mm-hmm. But I think it's because he knew he could trust me, you know, to get it done. But to where, you know, folks are, you the favorite. It's not that. It's just, he know if I say I'm going to do it, I'm going to deliver, and I'm going to deliver at a high quality, not because I'm so great. It's because, you know, look, we already know, let's try it. If it don't work, let's not sign out. You know? So, but for me, that part was, because he just let me do every single thing that I thought I wanted to do. He would say, so why you want to do that? And I knew he was going to ask that. So I always had a reason for why I was doing it. You know, and honestly, even though I say we're already at no, in my mind, if somebody says no, then that means, okay, I didn't explain it right. let me re-explain it to you. It doesn't make sense that you don't get it. So,
let me help you see why you forgot to say yes.
Yes, you know, because I'm like, okay, maybe I didn't ask it right. Maybe you didn't understand the whole scope of it. And that's how I approach literally everything in life. And my husband always said, you just don't think no applies to you. I'm like, it's not that. It's, you know, it kind of is, but it's not that.
Is it faith? Would you call it faith?
You know, I never considered myself to be a person who just was walking in faith. I married somebody who... Listen, if he thought Jesus said to him that the sky was going to turn purple tonight and it could be 11:59 and it still be nice and blue, he would say, but it's going to get purple. And that's helped me. You know, I couldn't be married 30 years. So, But the other part of working at the church is, and Apostle would laugh at me, the people sometimes, you know. I used to have a saying that Apostle would laugh at me and he would repeat it. I said, sometimes, you know, church people make you not want to go to church.
Facts.
And I would say it all the time. Like, look, these church people, because, you know, listen, I am from Detroit.
Facts.
I love God's people, but then sometimes I'm just like, and I'm just being real. We have a conversation.
It
was the hard part. Like, I don't like church. I don't like church. And what I mean by that is I don't like the legalities. I don't like the stuff that don't make sense. Like, it's if we doing it just because y'all been doing it for all these years, but it's not in the Bible. That stuff don't never resonated with me because I wasn't raised in the church. So I wasn't raised with all these traditions. And, you know, I got saved at a concert choir, a gospel choir production at my high school.
Wow.
So that's how my family didn't go. My grandparents were Catholic. So if they went to church, it was like a Catholic church, you know. Really? So my mother went to Catholic school, you know, on my dad's side, they went to church, but I wasn't as close with them. So okay. I got saved, you know, hanging out with my friends at the gospel choir. So then from there, I had to figure out, you know, what church to go to, what. And so I got saved in 10th grade. I didn't start going to church to 11th grade because I had a boyfriend from high school that was a preacher. And he took me to his church. It was a holiness church. And I'm looking like, what's going on? You know, I had to wear dresses all the time.
And really?
So, you know, so for me, you know, the just knowing church stuff wasn't.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up with it. And then when I saw it, I was like, yeah, I don't like this too much. But I love Jesus. I just didn't like the church stuff. So what you saw was me probably, you know, rebelling against church.
But you know what? I don't think it was a rebellion. So that's who I was. I personally think that's who I was at the church I grew up in until I got to Salem, because Salem was already doing stuff that I had never seen in church. And I'm like, wow, I didn't know you could do that at church. And I didn't know, you know, they talking about. Talking about swag and surf right now, and we was doing all of that, like, and all of that.
Said, don't come to Valley Kingdom, y'all, because
facts. So I came to Valley before I even went to Salem, and I came to a Bible study there for like almost 6 weeks. I was just coming over the summer. I had visited Salem, and then I went to Valley, and Valley was just a different church. And I was like, and so again, connecting to you and seeing that played out and seeing how, you know, again, the way you dressed, the way you would walk around, the stuff you would say. I mean, you weren't like belligerent or anything like that, but you didn't have that. And growing up in the church, I grew up very conservative. When I hit about 24-ish, I was like, yo, like, I can't do this like this no more. And I spent like my last 4 or 5 years at my church kind of in that rebellion mindset, not so much rebelling against them, but kind of like, I'm not fit for this whole, like, that's why I even changed the way I was preaching, because I was like, I've been trying to do this thing and none of this fits me. And so being in children's ministry was perfect because I got to be who I was. And kids have a way of humbling you. They have a way of making you be who you are. And if you're not, they will let you know, I don't like you, you phony, you whatever. And that was looking at like the history and looking at what I saw about you kind of going against the grain of traditions and against, like, you know, what now we're still tripping about swag and surf, but the church has been away from a lot of like churchiness. Well, some of the church, it seems like there's a new birth of religion coming back.
I just didn't know that that I was doing wasn't what, you know what I'm saying? Because I wasn't raised in the church. Again, I went to the holiness church and woo-hoo. You know, and then you know, when I came back from college, I went to like a Baptist church, and so I was like, this is the stark difference. I'm gonna be honest. I was like, we went from holiness, do what you want. So I was like, hey, that'd be something else in here.
Holiness to do what you want.
I had a Halloween party with like ghosts and goblins in the church basement. I was like, okay. Something about that's not right, and I didn't know, you know, I didn't know, but I was like, So I ended up, that's when I found, you know, perfecting. Mm-hmm. And, you know, at perfecting, I was in the music ministry. So, and then, you know, we moved here. But yeah. The Valley, I didn't realize, because it was so radical when I got there. The Valley was the first place I saw praise. I would just be watching, like, arts was always my love. Like, they are just dancing. So I was intrigued.
I hadn't seen it anywhere but the Valley. I visited the Valley in 94. Wow, that was a long time ago. And so that was the first place I saw all of that. So that was like the first place that I saw, you know, this difference. And the music was full, and they would hit some grooves in there occasionally, but they knew how to go right back to worship. And it was like, man, this is a little different. And so in relating that to you, when it came to just that aspect, you know, right now, I think there's a lot of, we're kind of in this cancel culture, exposure culture type of stuff. And this is not something that I, you know, we initially talked about or wrote about, but like in the middle of where we are now, how does a person, or how do you keep kind of middle, or is, should there be a middle? Maybe that's the question I should ask. Is there a middle, and is there a place in, when it comes to a person's relationship with God and the church, is there a middle ground, or are we just tripping about stuff, about everything?
You know what? So I feel a couple ways about this. Not a couple ways, but...
And we don't have to like delve into like people, but you know.
Yeah, it's about that whole, and I feel that way. So, you know, for your audience, I had a restaurant / bar. For my 25th wedding anniversary, my husband took me to this place, you know, brought me in and was like, "You like it?" And I'm like, "Okay." He like, "I want to buy it." And so I'm like, it was a stage. I noticed two things. I noticed the stage, and then I noticed this long bar. And so I'm like, okay. So he walked me around and he's like, "You know, I want to marry our two passions. Yours is music, mine is cooking. You know, we could do it in one place," and da-da-da-da. And I turned to him and I said, "So this, we going to keep the bar?" He was like, "Yeah, we're going to keep the bar. Now, we don't drink, none of that." I said, "We're going to keep the bar?" And he like, "Yeah." And so I'm like, okay. Now, you talking about somebody praying and like with the saints gone thing, with they, you know. And of course, we ended up opening the place, full bar. You know, I had to learn all the drinks and all this stuff. But when I say I've done more ministry, I did more ministry in the 4 years we had culture, and we was closed because of COVID during that time, than the whole 18 years I worked at the Valley. And I know that sounds, but it's true, because at the Valley, yeah, we would, you know, we did ministry, we did evangelism, we did, but at the bar, them people coming there will tell you all their business and looking for help. And so I was able to do so much ministry because I was shining my light on the light at, you know, in church, but at the bar, you know, I was shining my light on a lot of darkness. And so I brought that up to say, you know, it was a lot of people who was like, "I can't believe Pastor Lee's, them Lee's got a bar," and you know, all of that. I know you can't believe it, because what God didn't call you to it, he called me to it. It was my assignment. And so I feel like that about the stuff that's happening now, you know, in churches and stuff. Listen, I don't know what Jesus told you, because he didn't tell me. So, you know, whatever Jesus is telling you or not telling you is not my business. It's just not my business, because it's nothing you could come and say to me about, "Well, you know what you should not." Listen, Another thing, and this is probably, you know, you probably won't want to go here in this conversation.
No, but it's all right with me.
My daughter is gay. She's in a homosexual lifestyle. My pride and joy is my oldest daughter. She's actually my stepdaughter, but we don't do that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
And our relationship was strained because she felt like, you know, we wouldn't accept her because of our lifestyle. And my husband was crushed. He was crushed. And he was like, that something about this doesn't make sense. That the God I serve would not want me to be in relationship with my daughter because of this. And so, that was a big thing for us. And so she ended up getting married and she called us and she wanted to have the wedding in our backyard. Listen, we were like, oh, okay, now, Jesus, now what? And we went, thank God for Apostle. He prayed with us and we prayed about it. And for us, it was more important to show her the love of Christ than to judge her about this. And when I say it did a complete change for our relationship, it was people who was like, how could y'all ministers and all this? And, you know, listen. But my daughter knows that her parents, who are pastors, love her.
Absolutely.
And so I brought that up to say, you know, I don't have a heaven or a hell to put anybody in.
Yeah. Yeah.
No, and I can't say what God is telling you to do or not do, you know, because even with scriptures, I can have a room full of preachers and we can exegesis the same scripture and come up with 32,000 thousand different meanings, explanations, revelations, and who's to say any of us are wrong?
Absolutely.
So that's kind of my stance on that. Listen. Absolutely. At the end of the day, let's just pray that what we're doing is going to get us in and the people that have followed us going to get in too. That's how I feel.
It's something. I feel like there should have been a hand clap inserted in there somewhere. But I I'm glad we had that in that you basically shared that, because I think, so I have friends who are not churched. I explained to you at the very beginning, well, when we were off camera, that I am not in a deconstruction. I'm not a part of that deconstructing, taking down the church. I'm not on that mindset. But what I am, I'm concerned about the unchurched and the rechurched. And I'm concerned about people who don't even have a thought about God. But they're here on earth with a purpose.
Yes.
And so, you know, I'm never, excuse me, without the mindset of there are people who need to understand who they are and why they are who they are. Yes. And who they were made to be, who God designed them to be. Now, you don't have to believe in God. I won't even say my God. You don't have to believe in God. But at the end of the day, you have so much potential in you, and it's innately in you because your life, your body, your spirit, your soul knows who you are and knows where God has brought you and has given to you. And so there are things about a person that will just innately come out of them and they don't know where it comes from. That's a gift. That's when we call it a gift of God. And with you saying everything you just said, I it makes me, you know, sometime I really question stuff we do in the name of Jesus, you know.
Yeah.
Because it's not the spirit of Jesus. One of the, and I was going to ask you about this, and but one of the biggest lessons I learned from Jesse Jackson, it wasn't to me personally, but it was I was sitting in the room and he was talking and he said, there are often people do stuff in the name of Jesus. that does not have the spirit of Jesus at all. The spirit of Jesus would not allow some of people to do some of this stuff they do if they really walked in his spirit. You know what I'm saying? And that's what I, in everything you said, that's what I hear. There's a difference between just in the name of Jesus and actually having the spirit of Christ. The spirit of Christ walks in unconditional love, but not unconditional. It's unconditional love, but not against stuff and not belligerent, but not like accepting everything. I mean, there's a guy I was reading. There's a guy, Holy Smokes. I don't know if you've ever heard of Holy Smokes, but anyway, I was reading a article that he wrote or a post he wrote. And he said, if y'all really want the Jesus of the Bible, and if you really looked at his life, he would probably not be your Jesus, because in his day, not only was he radical, but all his friends were really friends who were like, he had thieves, he had IRS, he hung out with the people in the bar. He hung out with the people. That's who he was. He was a radical. He did marches. And that's another thing I learned from Jesse Jackson, is when you look at it in perspective, Matthew 21, when he came into Jerusalem, that was almost like a rally. That was a rally, because they were celebrating him as king. And I'm saying, as king, it was a political rally. But I'm saying all that to say is what I hear you saying, and what I see and have seen over the years with you, is that you stay out of that stuff. Religion. Yeah. There's a difference between relationship and religion.
Yeah, I hate religion, you know, because religion separates.
Yeah.
It just separates. I don't care how you put it, you know, it separates. I almost feel like it's meant to separate, you know, and I just don't have time for it. I just want people to get Jesus, you know? And so again, as a children's pastor, that was just so important to me, you know, not only that these kids got Jesus, but they got it in a way that was palatable for them.
Exactly. There you go.
And appreciate him and love him later. And it's so crazy, because this past Monday, I went to the Rainbow Push Martin Luther King Scholarship breakfast. Mm-hmm. And Jackson was there. I absolutely am in awe every time I hear him open his mouth, every time I'm in the room with him, because I'm just like, for one, he believes in the cause. He's so serious, and he's still talking about it at a million years old. There was, you know, we were there as pastors and sponsors. And so we were, you know, seated with the dignitaries and stuff. And so when we were escorted to our seat, the girl behind us tapped me. And it was another lady from our church, Michelle Akins. She said, "Listen, when I was a little girl, I went to the valley." And she said, I used to dance. She was like, "You guys were my heroes." And she said, "Especially you, Sergeant Lee." She got me Sergeant Lee. She's like, "Let me introduce you to my boss. This is the head of NBC Chicago. I'm doing blah, blah." Yes. And she was just like, "You have no idea. She said, "I was impacted by, you know, what you taught." She said, "I looked up to you." And she was like, "I still hold on to some of the stuff you taught me." Wow. I would have passed on the street, never known who she was. Wow. I'm still trying to remember now. So, you know, years later, for that to happen was just so, you know, it was one of those full circle moments.
Yeah.
The other thing was, there were some young people there that did speeches. Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. I was so blown away. And one of the girls was a little girl who had, you know, came from the valley. And she was just, her mom turned to me and said, "Those are seeds you planted." I was at the Martin Luther King program, you know, because it was just like, God, first of all, to be there for the reason I was there, you know, supporting scholarship and, you know, something I really believe in, mm-hmm. being in that building to celebrate Dr. King's holiday, and then to have those two moments happen.
Yeah.
I was there. I was like, God, you're so dope. That happened. You're so dope, guy. And that's how I felt. I was just like, yeah.
You, there's so much. I wish we had a whole lot more time, but let me ask you this. How are you involved? Are you like really involved in like social justice and all of that? Or what does that mean for you?
So I'm not overly woke or nothing. I'm not going to the rallies or any, you know, it's just, I just believe in celebrating our Blackness and letting little girls and little boys know how precious they are just as a Black kid. Like, that means so much to me. I am so Black, like, you know, and not to not anybody else, you know, I have to say this. Mm-hmm. It's so funny because I'm listening to you say hi. I was a mentor. Sir, you mentored me, sir. Whatever. Sir. Listen, I still today use your budget that you gave me for summer camp.
Really?
I use it for everything. What? I still use it today. But you introduced me to Kidman.
About Kidman.
Listen, I go there and it's seven of us there and it's, you know, 5,000 people there. Yeah. And so I'm like, and I'm watching.
I don't know why I was thinking it was something else. Yeah, you're right. I'm sorry. I'm talking out loud.
I know. You're like, yeah. I'm watching them do ministry on a level that I had not even knew was possible, you know, and I'm thinking I'm jamming over here at the Valley
Kingdom. You were, though. You were, though.
I went to Kidman. First of all, my first year at Kidman, I was teaching.
Yes, I remember.
I taught urban ministry at Kidman. And I was so blown away, but it let me know. I was like, this what we doing? I was like, look, Apostle. The white people doing this over here. And so he just, again, let me, because I'm like, we missing stuff. It needs to look like children's ministry over here. Don't look like children's ministry. Yeah. Look, we y'all letting us use your sanctuary. He let me paint the walls and put all kind of stuff up. And, you know,
I remember when I came over there for that little conference you did, and I'm like, oh, this is a lot different from years ago. Did I say little conference? I did not mean little conference. I didn't mean it like that. I heard somebody in my spirit say, oh, he just said her little conference. But honestly, when I came over there, I saw that. And I saw how you kind of radically took things to the next level. What was something you learned when leaving after working at the church, or do you still work there?
I do not.
Okay.
I haven't been there in 8 years.
Okay. No. What was something you walked away from those experiences, knowing maybe about yourself or something that was like a life change for you?
I think it goes back to what I was saying earlier about Apostle just allowing me to do and be everything that I was, you know. He really cultivated my creativity. And so, and he just kind of let me kick the glass ceiling away. And so I think that was my biggest takeaway from working. First of all, the spirit of excellence. That man right there.
Yeah.
We lead in the spirit of excellence.
Yeah.
And so that was my biggest takeaway, is do stuff excellently. Even if you don't know what you're doing, you do it like it's excellent, and it'll look like you know what you're doing, and it'll open other doors. And just I learned about me is, you know, if it's here, it could be there. Like, I can do it. If I can think about it, I can do it. I really learned that. Yeah. And to have a pastor that, you know, pushed that and supported it, you know, I'm like, I found Sidewalk Sunday School. He sent me there to learn about it. I came back, you know, they bought me a van. he let me paint the van. You know, it just, he really allowed for everything that God had placed in me. He allowed me to do it. And, you know, I'm still doing everything that God has for me. It can be crazy stuff. I'm telling you, I just had a bar.
So in maybe the last 5-10 minutes, can we kind of land there for a second? And I want to take a little turn. So the bar closed. Your restaurant. I wanted to say it was the bar. Right. But it was more. was that a tough transition for you?
Oh my goodness. Real quick. So we opened December 31st, 2019. COVID happened March 17th, 2020 is when they shut everything down. So I was only open 2.5 months when I started. So, you know, I told you, I'm like, Jesus told us to do this. Jesus, you told us to do this, you know. And so we were closed for 4 months. We opened for, you know, a few months, closed again because of COVID. We were going. We were open for almost a year, closed again. When we bought the place, we knew that we needed to put in a commercial kitchen. We were closing one thing prior to COVID. We ended up paying 3 times the amount because of labor, And so the kitchen, we put a kitchen into a building that we had almost a land contract type of situation. We put a $450,000 kitchen in there. A lot of my own personal money was used. And so, but it just didn't work out. You know, so my husband, I told you, presented that to me, but I brought in a business partner because I didn't trust us. Trust that we had enough business acumen for this big project. Brought in a business partner that, in my opinion, had the business acumen, had the, you know, and no, not to them or anything, it didn't work. And I should have just did it with my husband and I. You know, I should have just tried, because I would have rather us failed, just us, than, you know, because it strained the relationship with my business partner. It, you know, it just created undue stuff that didn't have to be there. Had I just trusted what God had placed in my husband, what God had placed in me. So it was tough. So we officially closed in December of last year. We had actually been closed since June because we just couldn't afford to operate. And so, you know, but we still had the place. And so we just officially closed, and it was tough. I had never dealt with, like, you know, that kind of depression, or, you know, and I was depressed, you know,
really
through just even the ups and downs of business. And so, you know, I spent a lot of couch time with the therapist because
so okay. This conversation, on purpose conversation, is birthed out of me seeing a therapist. Last year, I was challenged from my therapist. So she pulled me from work and was like, you need a lot of work. So all those phone calls, you remember, you were one of the only people that knew when I went through burnout in children's ministry. And in fact, I remember when you called me to teach at your conference and you was like, I got the perfect class for you. And it was, why me? It's like, it was on burnout. And so I went through that. But in all of that, and years ago, I had been told that, you know, you really need to talk to some stuff. And I had a lot of stuff. And, you know, we just, Black people, number one, and then Black Christians, especially number two, don't see therapists. And so one of the things that I was challenged to do, I was given 14 days every single day to work on the stuff that you, and my therapist happens to be a Christian, a believer, and was like, I need you to work on your purpose, your passions, because you're, by this time I had hit a wall. Yeah. And thank God I had, I remember the first time, it was 2004. It was 20, was that 30 years ago?
Yeah. 20.
20 years ago. I hit that wall, and then still life was still beating me up, and I hadn't gotten, and I got to a place, I told my wife last year, I remember walking in the kitchen saying, I need to see somebody. And so I started that journey of seeing a therapist. But all of this was birthed after 14 days that she said, every single day, I need you to work on something, some passion, getting back to who you are and what you are, because it was a bad place. And here's the question for you. Number one, how did you get through that? Or not how did you get through it? Because I don't know where you are in that place now. I didn't even know you were going to therapy, but what drove you? I'm trying to be.
I'm getting a therapist, girl. Okay, so
yeah. I was trying to be.
Get all right. Yeah,
that's what I appreciate you. You were always able to translate.
So honestly, the thing with the restaurant created a really bad friction for me and my husband in our marriage. We didn't know what it was. You know, at that point, we couldn't pinpoint this is what it is, but it was not good around here. And we were working together all day, and then we had differences of opinion. So it was just, and so it put our marriage in a really, really volatile place, really, really bad place. And, you know, it was like, yo, we need to go see somebody else. Now we've been to counseling. I can't tell you how many times, you know, married 30 years. But it was like
30 years this year too, right?
Yeah, this year. Yep.
Yeah. Okay.
It's like it was at do or die. And so in that, you know, of course, me being the perfect wife that I am, I was like, you know, and he was like, you act like it's nothing wrong with you. And I'm like, and it was like, yeah, so you might want to go and get that, you know, get talk to somebody else. But and so I was just like, yeah, okay. But deep down, I was crying out for that. I was breaking on the inside. And so you know, started going to therapy and you know, started pulling back those onion layers and and so we see each other regularly now, because at one point I was going every week, sometimes twice a week. You know, so now, you know, we're at a little less, but I still see her.
Yeah, that, you know, that's important, and it's important for people. Mental health is important, and Black people don't believe in it all the time, and especially Black Christians. It's like, you ain't of God if like, you got to talk to somebody.
And it's so interesting because, you know, I closed a restaurant, and I know you're going to ask me this, so I'm just going to jump right in and say this because I know our time is well spent, as they say in the church. So I write plays, you know, I'm doing plays. And so I'm actually working with another partner, but no, he actually approached me to help him with one of his plays. And we ended up writing this play called Real Relationships. And it's about a therapist couple who you know, and their clients their that they see while they're having their own turmoil. And we address the stigmas of Black people going to therapy in this piece. So that's what I'm working. And it's not a church play though. It's not a church play. I didn't want it from the perspective of the church, although we have, you know, it's who I am. It's it is not a church play. It is definitely about real relationships. And so it'll be going up in March 22nd and 23rd at the Cairo Center on the West Side. And then we'll be presenting it at one of the city colleges in April.
So say it again. When is it happening and where it's happening?
So it's going to be March 22nd and 23rd at the Kyron Center on the West Side of Chicago. I'm sorry, because we were a while here. Hey. it's on the West Side of Chicago. And then we'll be putting it up at the city colleges. One of them, a couple of them, we're still in negotiations for that in Chicago as well. So I'm super excited about that, because that's, you know, the arts is my first love. I love it. So
I love it. This conversation has been thorough. There's a whole lot of other stuff. We may have to do a part two at some point.
Look, anytime.
You know, you were talking, and it just reminded me of like that whole acting thing. One of the credits I have for acting actually is for a movie called The Lost Ones, where I was the therapist to the actor. And oh, you know what? I forgot the hand thing, the hand gestures. Oh my God, that's gonna be I don't know if you saw that or not.
I said, okay, the Lost One.
That wasn't me trying to even celebrate myself either. But the one thing I got was for a movie where I played the therapist, and the guy who needed therapy was, if you ever saw Empire, the guy who was the policeman, who was, I can't remember if he was Terrence Howard's brother or somebody's brother, but he was a police. Anyway, that was the guy who was the other principal in that movie. And at the end of the short, it was a short film. At the end of it, they found out that I had the same issue that he had, and even worse. And so all of that, you know, as I was listening, I was thinking, man, that reminds me, you know, everybody, the doctor, who's doctoring the doctor? And who's helping, who's preaching to the preacher or ministering to the minister? Again, this has been a thorough conversation. There's so much more. And maybe, again, at some point want to have you back and kind of dive into maybe some new stuff. But that's the latest thing. Where can somebody reach you?
So at legacyllc.com. Legacy is our family business conglomerate. And so when you go to that website, you'll see my daughter's businesses and my husband and all the things that we have going on together. And so, yeah.
And folks, that they doing some stuff too. It reminds me of Umbrella, a friend of mine was putting together, where it's like a business and you have all these other businesses under it. It looks very exciting. Is that all that's happening with you? Is there anything else that we need? I mean, I know you're a singer, you're a writer. What's going on in that area?
So my day job is I'm A&R for independent record label. We have four imprints, Kingdom Records with Shekinah Glory, of course. And then, you know, I also do the secular side. I'm doing that right now. My biggest thing is putting out the plays. My husband and I have a food service management company where we, you know, provide food service for assisted living facilities. Mm-hmm. 165 days a year, 3 meals a day. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. So we currently do that as well as catering and things. And so we got a lot going on, you know, just supporting my son who's in LA. He was just on, he was on a reality show, Issa Rae's reality show, Sweet Life Los Angeles. He's doing some great, great things in LA. He's also a drama and film teacher at a charter school up there. So super proud of, you know, the things that we have going on.
Yeah, your family, as I watch y'all on Facebook and every place else, your family is really like, y'all like the Jacksons without all of the extra. Y'all, everybody is doing, but y'all got a lot of stuff going on. And what's amazing, and I'm give you flowers as we get ready to close. What's amazing is that your family is doing purpose. Your family is intentional. Your family is really living out their passions. And that's what I've appreciated about you over the years. As I said, I mean, you've served as a mentor for me. When I've had some really hard moments in ministry, like, hey, Sarge, I didn't call you Sarge, I called you Sheree, but everybody else did. But it's like, hey, Sheree, I need like some help. When I went through that time of burnout, you know, you knew what to say and told me you were one of the people to say, hey, you need some time, you need to get away. And then when I got well, you did what Jesus said to Peter, like, now you need to go back and strengthen your brother. So,
I said, yes, come tell the folk about it.
Tell the folks about it. Yeah. But I've appreciated over the years, the friendship and the mentorship, but I've also appreciated your leadership and have seen how that you personify what you say. You know, I don't follow y'all home. I don't frequent your doorstep, but I can say everything that I've seen, I've pretty much heard when I hear anything is you are who you say you are, you know, and that's what I've, I've appreciated. And I just want to say to you, thank you for like being that in all these years, you know, as I read at the very beginning or talked about at the very beginning, the scripture says, you know, they're friends who play friendship, but true friends sticks close as a next of kin or as the King James Version says, as a brother. But that's what I've appreciated over the years is how you've stuck by, you've been a phone call away or a church away or a church ride away. You're the same day in, day out, and you have been examples for thousands of kids, thousands of adults. Even here, you know, that you're still involved and you're still doing stuff like with the push stuff and all of that. I just want to give you your flowers and tell you how much you are appreciated and how much we as a community have benefited from you. There are people who I've influenced, but it's because of conversations with you. And so I want to thank you for all of that.
I'd be remiss if I didn't say, you know, the greatest thing for me is my daughter is the current children's pastor of the Valley now.
Really?
My daughter. Yep. She's been children's pastor now for 4 years. Yep. And she's me on steroids. Like,
really?
Girl, her creativity makes mine look like I don't know what I'm doing. It's to see my daughter do and listen, you thought I was radical. I'm over here telling her, you shouldn't be doing this. You know, those millennials, something different.
Wow.
So my daughter is a children's pastor.
That's so amazing. See, that to me, and I told my wife, when your children can follow in your footsteps, especially Black kids and Black kids in church, or they want to have anything to do with that, that shows the character of the person, because I know, and you know too, a lot of kids who parents are in ministry won't even darken the door.
Listen, I don't want nothing to do with it.
They don't want nothing to do with it. So that again speaks to who you are, the Sarge. My friend, those of you who are watching, you can reach her at legacyllc.com. She is amazing at what she does. Her husband's a chef. Reach out to him. If that restaurant is not open, but I know he's still cooking, so it's got to be some food somewhere.
Yep, catering, yeah. Go to Legacy. You can see all that we're doing.
Exactly. I just want people to know you all and know your story, but also walk away saying, like, that's a person of purpose, that's a person of intention, and her family, she's leaving a legacy that is changing new generations, and generations to come. Thank you so much for joining me today. Sheree, thank you for coming by. And those of you who you never know. You don't know. I won't say you never know. You don't know the influence and the impact. But today, hopefully, I was able to get some of that. Those of you who are watching, again, you can reach out to leadersimage.com for any information. Join my email list there. It's epluribus@leadersimage.com. Reach out to Sheree. But we want you to live lives that are on purpose. Look, again, I believe in the principle of educar. It's a Latin word that means bring out. There is something inside of you. It's where we get the English word education. And so hopefully this conversation and the more that are coming will inform you. It will encourage you, but it will also inspire you to be the best you. Thank you for watching, and we love you. Have a good one.